नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमम् देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयो मुदीरयेत् नाष्टप्रयेषु अभद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भगवाच्युत्तमश्लोके भक्तिर्भवति नैष्ठिके. Before reciting the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is our very means of conquest, let us offer obeisances unto the Personality of Godhead, Lord Narayan, unto Narayan Rishi, the supermost human being, unto Mother Saraswati, the goddess of learning, and unto Śrīla Vyāsadeva, the author. By regular attendance and classes on the Bhagavatam, and by rendering service to the pure devotee, all that is inauspicious within the heart is practically destroyed, and thus, loving service to the Personality of Godhead, who is praised with transcendental song, is established as an irrevocable fact. Om Jnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Salakaya Chakshur Unmalitam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. I was born in the darkest of ignorance, and my spiritual master is forcing open my eyes with the torch light of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisances unto him. Vanchakalpa tarubhyascha kripa sindubhyevacha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivashadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Today we're finishing off chapter 13 of Canto 5, and we'll do the first verse of chapter 14. Oh gosh. my little friend, to tell her that I'm offline. Is it, tell her I'm giving class. It's Sue Devi. She's in Alaska now. Let's see here. So the final verse, we now know that previously we were hearing that the conversation between Maharaj Rahugana and Judd Bharat, and then Sukadev Goswami, because we know how the Srimad Bhagavatam is, it's conversations nested in conversations nested in conversations, all to answer primary and secondary questions concerning what is the duty of a man who's about to die, which is all of us, right? Prabhupada was saying that Maharaj Parikshit, he had 7 days. He knew he had 7 days to live. He said, we don't even know if we have 7 seconds, but we think we have 7 millions of years. So now the conversation is back to Shukadeva Goswami and King Parikshit. King Parikshit then told Shukadeva Goswami, my dear Lord, O great devotee sage, you are omniscient. We heard in the beginning of the Bhagavatam that Shukadeva Goswami was so spiritually advanced that he had the power to enter into the heart of everyone. I had this experience when I first saw Srila Prabhupada. I knew he could, you could feel that, you could know that he could go right into the heart of everyone. I was like, I actually felt he was in here, and I thought, how? Like, it was kind of a mystical experience. You know, he's there and he's here. Of course, he probably saw how dirty it was and thought, maybe I'll wait a while. He left, but no, he didn't really leave, but I don't always feel his presence. It takes a very highly purified stage of consciousness. Go away, my friend. I should turn off my internet, I guess. How do I do that? A second here. Okay, she said obeisances to everybody here. She said. I don't know how to. Oh, yeah, shut down Skype. Okay. How do I do that? Huh? Alt F4. Shift mean Alt? Alt F4. Then it'll be easy to open it up again after, right? Okay. Alt F4. Do you want to save? No, no. It tells me to close down my document here. Okay, try again. Alt F4. Okay. Okay. All right. Okay. Yeah, so he said that you're omniscient. So that we're saying how Shukadev Goswami could enter the heart of everyone. This is very rare. Only very few pure devotees have this capacity to be able to see into the heart of everyone. It's like my god sister, Sritama said when she saw Prabhupada, that she could see that Prabhupada could see right into her heart. But it doesn't mean that the spiritual master is like Krishna. He's omniscient. He's everywhere at all times. It's a different kind of omniscience. So King Prakshit continues, you have very nicely described the position of the conditioned soul who is compared to a merchant in the forest. From these instructions, intelligent men can understand that the senses of a person in the bodily conception are like rogues and thieves in that forest, and one's wives and children are like jackals and other ferocious children. Sorry, ferocious animals, forgive me. However, it is not very easy for the unintelligent to understand the purport of this story. That's me. Because it is difficult to extricate the exact meaning from the allegory, I therefore request your holiness to give the direct meaning. It's actually very important that we understand this properly. Because otherwise, because of these kind of descriptions, different misconceptions grew up among devotees in the movement, because we weren't necessarily all that intelligent. So one time a sannyasi was here giving a class, and he said, and the child gets born, and he's just a screaming, squirming meatball. And one of my friends came up to me after this, he said, my child is not a screaming, squirming meatball. And even one might say it's the prerogative of a sannyasi to think like that, but actually it's just not true. A child is not a screaming, squirming meatball. I'm sorry. Even if in the Bhagavatam it says that the children and the wife are jackals and ferocious animals, it's very important that we understand this properly. But Prabhupada says, there are many stories and incidents in Srimad Bhagavatam that are described figuratively. Such allegorical descriptions may not be understood by unintelligent men. Therefore, it is the duty of the student to approach a bona fide spiritual master for the direct explanation. So I only had two comments about this. It's important that we know in the Bhagavatam what sections are to be considered allegorical and what parts are to be accepted as factual. Some of the very fantastic explanations in the Bhagavatam may not be so easy to accept as factual, but we are expected to accept them as factual. And of course, then there are some allegories which seem more real to us than the facts. So it's very important under spiritual guidance to know what we have to accept as factual and others as allegorical. So this description of the merchant in the forest, or the allegory of the merchant in the forest with the soul and conditional life, is allegorical. And also, Prabhupada says we have to, or the verse says we have to approach a bona fide spiritual master for the direct explanation. It's very important that when we approach the spiritual master, we're approaching him appropriately. People approach the spiritual master for all kinds of things. And so we have to know when and why and how. Who remembers the three ingredients when one approaches the spiritual master? Three very important ingredients. qualifications. An inquiry, intelligent inquiry. Prabhupada said both blind following and absurd inquiries are condemned. You don't go to the spiritual master like, I was just listening to a class Prabhupada was given, and he was speaking about a particular subject matter in the Bhagavad Gita. Then people start asking him questions like, what is the relationship of Krishna, of Radharani and Balaram? And all kinds of questions about Radha. And Prabhupada said, finally Prabhupada said, why are you asking these questions? At the end of the class, you should try to ask questions that are relevant to the subject matter, the things that you haven't quite understood or you'd like to clarify more. He said, otherwise the questions can go on forever. And of course he was saying that the topics of Radha are very confidential. Anyhow, approaching a spiritual master appropriately is very important, and we'll hear more about this in the next verse, the first verse of the next chapter. Thus ends the Bhaktivedanta purports of the 5th canto, 13th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled Further Talks Between King Rahugana and Jadbharata. And the next question is called, and the next verse is called, the material world, next chapter is called the material world as the great forest of enjoyment. Very long verse, so please bear with me. When King Parikshit asked Shukadeva Goswami about the direct meaning of the material forest, Shukadeva Goswami replied as follows. So I want you to listen very carefully, because I'm going to ask you, if you understood something, I'm going to ask you to give back some of the essential points, okay? Because it's long and we have to somehow keep our attention. My dear King, a man belonging to the mercantile community, Vanik, is always interested in earning money. Sometimes he enters the forest to acquire some cheap commodities like wood and earth and sell them in the city at good prices. Similarly, the conditioned soul, being greedy, enters this material world for some material profit. Gradually, he enters the deepest part of the forest, not really knowing how to get out. Having entered the material world, this pure soul becomes conditioned by the material atmosphere, which is created by the external energy under the control of Lord Vishnu. Thus, the living entity comes under the control of the external energy, Daivi Maya. Living independently and bewildered in the forest, he does not attain the association of devotees who are always engaged in the service of the Lord. Once in the bodily conception, he gets different types of bodies, one after the other, under the influence of material energy, and impelled by the modes of material nature, sattva-guna, rajoguna, and tamaguna. In this way, the conditioned soul goes sometimes to the heavenly planets, sometimes to the earthly planets, and sometimes to the lower planets and lower species. Thus he suffers continuously due to different types of bodies. These sufferings and pains are sometimes mixed. Sometimes they are very severe, and sometimes they are not. These bodily conditions are acquired due to the conditioned soul's mental speculation. He uses his mind and 5 senses to acquire knowledge, and these bring about the different bodies and different conditions. Using the senses under the control of the external energy, Maya, the living entity suffers the miserable conditions of material existence. He is actually searching for relief, but he is generally baffled. Sometimes he is relieved after great difficulty. Struggling for existence in this way, he cannot get the shelter of pure devotees who are like bumblebees engaged in loving service at the lotus feet of Lord Vishnu. Long verse, huh? A lot of information in there. I mean, there's basic points. Who can remember some of the basic points? I can give you a little lead. Why is the conditioned soul compared to a merchant? He's greedy. Yes, he's greedy for material profit, Jadarani. So what does he do then? So what's his activity then? What does the merchant do? Say, Papa talks about what the merchant does, huh? So what is his activity in the allegory? Yes. What is he going in there to get? Wood, stones, other cheap commodities. And what does he want to do with all of that? Where? Yeah, right, okay. So, what happens to him then? Yes. He doesn't know how to get out. Okay, so then Sukadeva Goswami compares this to the conditioned soul who's entered into the pure soul, who's become conditioned by the material atmosphere, which is what? No. He's trying very hard to be happy. And he becomes bewildered. And what is the most important thing that he should get that he doesn't get? Happiness, yes. Yes, the association of devotees. And not only does he not get the association of devotees, what does he get? Yes, and he gets different types of bodies because of this different association of the different material gunas. Up, down. One who is actually learned and philosophically inclined should inquire about the knowledge that he can't get from going to the highest planet in the material world down to the lowest. And even though one wants sense gratification, he wants happiness, he will get it just the same way that he gets miseries, even though he doesn't look for them. That's another verse from Bhagavatam. So he suffers continuously. He suffers continuously because of the different types of bodies. And sometimes his sufferings are mixed because he's using his senses under the control of the material energy. He's searching for relief, but he doesn't get it. And he's baffled. He's confused. He might get some relief temporarily. And he doesn't get the shelter of pure devotees. What are the pure devotees compared to? Remember? Yeah, bumblebees. The lotus feet of Lord Vishnu. Beautiful, beautiful analogy. Okay, Srila Prabhupada's purport. It's a long purport, so I will stop periodically and say some comments. So Prabhupada says, the most important information in this verse is, this is the last line of this section, of this long prose. You can see it up there. Hari Guru Charana Aravinda Madhukara Anupadavim. In this material world, the conditioned souls are baffled by their activities, and sometimes they are relieved after great difficulty. Just so you know that this, what Prabhupada says is most important verse, is the shelter of pure devotees who are like bumblebees engaged in loving service at the lotus feet of Lord Vishnu. That Prabhupada, this is the most important part of the verse. In this material world, the conditioned souls are baffled by their activities, and sometimes they are relieved after great difficulty. On the whole, the conditioned soul is never happy. Actually, his only business is to accept the spiritual master, the guru, and through him he must accept the lotus feet of the Lord. This is explained by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Guru Krishna Prasadi Paya Bhakti Lata Bija. I give you the translation. According to their karma, all living entities are wandering throughout the entire universe. Some of them are being elevated to the upper planetary systems, and some are going down into the lower planetary systems. out of many millions of wandering living entities, one who is very fortunate gets an opportunity to associate with a bona fide spiritual master by the grace of Krishna. By the mercy of both Krishna and the spiritual master, such a person receives the seed of the creeper of devotional service. People struggling for existence in the forest or cities of the material world are not actually enjoying life. They are simply suffering different pains and pleasures, generally pains that are always inauspicious. They try to gain release from these pains, but they cannot due to their ignorance. For them, it is stated in the Vedas, Tad vijnanartham sagurum eva vigatschet, from the Mundaka Upanishad. Translation, according to the... This verse means that one should approach a spiritual master with water in his hands and wood, and he should say to the spiritual master, please engage me in your service and inquire from the spiritual master. That's the general translation of the Mundaka Upanishad verse. When the living entity is lost in the forest of the material world in the struggle for existence, his first business is to find a bona fide guru who is always engaged at the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu. After all, if he is at all eager to be relieved of the struggle for existence, he must find a bona fide guru and take instructions at his lotus feet. In this way, he can get out of the struggle. So this is a very important if. Sometimes people get tired of hearing, you must do this, you should do that. But there's always this clause that comes before. If, well, it's not even a clause. Yeah, it's a clause. It's a dependent clause. If you want to be happy, if you want to make spiritual advancement, if you at all want to be relieved from the struggle of material existence, and it is testimony to the power of Maya on all of us that we're not feeling this at every moment, that we're not realizing at every moment our existential dilemma in this world, because Maya is very merciful. We'll probably go nuts if we want to get out and we are not fully realizing how we want to get out. So that anxiety is developing within our heart. The anxiety for our own personal difficulty, and along with that, the compassion, the realize when we get more and more knowledge, we get not only our personal anxiety, but we get the anxiety for others who are suffering in this world. So it's very rare to find someone who's fixed in his understanding that this world is no place for a gentleman and that I want to go to my real home. Just like the great poet Rumi, he said, what did he say? He said, I come from another place, I'm sure of that, and I'm determined to go back there. So Prabhupada says in another place, in a purport in the Bhagavatam, Canto 1, the Lord is reciprocally respondent to his devotees. When he sees that a devotee is completely sincere in getting admittance to the transcendental service of the Lord and has thus become eager to hear about him, the Lord acts from within the devotee in such a way that the devotee may easily go back to him. The Lord is more anxious to take us back into his kingdom than we can desire. Most of us do not desire at all to go back to Godhead. Only a very few men want to go back to Godhead. But anyone who desires to go back to Godhead, Sri Krishna helps in all respects. Just like there's this verse in the Bhagavad Gita, the amazing verse, you remember? That some look on the soul is amazing, some hear of him is amazing, some describe him as amazing, and some, even after hearing of him, they can't understand him at all. And the Prabhupada says in the purport of that verse that it's very rare to find someone who has the knowledge of the soul, the super soul, and the relation between them. And it's even more rare to find someone who has the knowledge, who fully understands it and applies it. But is that if anyone does that, then they are guaranteed pure realization and freedom from the material existence and a loving relationship with the Lord. So it's an open secret, but until we're very advanced, it remains quite a secret for us. Since the material world is compared herein to a forest, it may be argued that in Kali Yuga, modern civilization is mainly situated in the cities. So how are we expected to understand this? This is the point. But Prabhupada says, actually, a great city, however, is like a great forest. Actually, city life is more dangerous than life in the forest. If one enters an unknown city without friend or shelter, living in that city is more difficult than living in a forest. So, you know, the proverbial concrete jungle, you've heard that expression? The city is like a concrete jungle. There are many big cities all over the surface of the globe, and wherever one looks, he sees the struggle for existence going on 24 hours a day. People rush about in cars going 70 and 80 miles an hour, constantly coming and going, and this sets the scene of the great struggle for existence. So how often did you hear Prabhupada talking about this motor car civilization? And only the way that he could, Prabhupada would describe, vroom, vroom, vroom. He would talk about the cars going back and forth. He was very good at imitating the sounds. I can't do it the way that he does. He felt so much compassion for these people rushing back and forth. He would say, what is the difference if you're rushing on four wheels and the dog is rushing on four legs? There's no, if the goal is simply eating, sleeping, mating, and defending, there's no difference. Just in the car, it's more dangerous. One has to rise early in the morning and travel in that car at breakneck speed. There's always the danger of an accident, and one has to take great care. Prabhupada knew what he was talking about. He was in accidents. He had first-hand experience. He lost disciples in car accidents. They died in car accidents. And he was in a car accident himself. I'll describe what Prabhupada went through. Actually, there's different descriptions of this. And one of the descriptions, I couldn't find it. I was looking for it on a folio. Prabhupada kept telling the devotee to slow down. And the devotee kept speeding up. And the next thing you know... But Satsrupa Maharaja was a little bit more generous in his description of the accident. I'll read it to you. Shrivada Gopinath, he died. Jagannatha Dev Subhadra Maharani, he died. Giriraj, he died. Shishigoni Thai, he died. Remember when Mahavishnu, the elder Mahavishnu, was here? Whenever the curtains would open, he'd go, you people don't know how lucky you are. He would look at the elder. And I mean, today when I see the deities, we don't know how lucky we are. They're so beautiful. Someone really, all the pujaris really excel themselves today. Really exquisite. So Prabhupada is in Mauritius, but the Prime Minister isn't quite prepared to see him yet. So the Prime Minister of Mauritius had agreed to meet Srila Prabhupada, but couldn't see him for several days. Therefore, Srila Prabhupada visited South Africa, then returned to Mauritius, but still the time for the appointment was not fixed. Let Srila Prabhupada have the use of my car, the Prime Minister said, and I will meet with him later. Srila Prabhupada and Brahmananda and Pushyakrishna Swamis toured the island in the Prime Minister's chauffeur-driven car. The sugarcane fields were grown so high that they obstructed the view on the winding roads. Going around a curve, a Volkswagen Bug drifted into the wrong lane and collided head-on with Srila Prabhupada's car. Moments before the accident, Srila Prabhupada, sitting cross-legged in the back seat, had picked up his cane and placed it firmly in front of him, just to brace himself. At the moment of impact, the cane gave him the support, the necessary support to avoid being thrown excessively forward. Still, he was bleeding in several places, and his knee was badly bruised. Both the driver and Pushyakrishna Swami, sitting in the front seat, were injured, as was the couple in the other car. Both cars were totaled, destroyed. Flagging down a passing car, Brahmananda Swami pleaded with the driver to give Srila Prabhupada a ride back to his quarters. There, Harikesh Prabhu followed Srila Prabhupada's calm instructions on how to make a poultice for the injured knee. Poultice is like a kind of hot cloth with herbs. Only then did Srila Prabhupada speak about the accident. He revealed, Krishna saved me. He told me what to do. Srila Prabhupada knows about these car accidents. He knows how dangerous. I mean, I also have experience, first-hand experience of being in at least 15 car accidents. Hare Krishnas are the worst drivers in the world. Sorry. Love them all, but they usually sleep too much. I mean, too little, and maybe eat too much. And then it's a disaster for driving. They work too hard, eat too hard, and sleep too little. So if you're ever with a Hare Krishna, you have to drill them. Did you sleep enough when you're driving with them? And you have to, if you're a little worried, you sit in the front and you talk to them. Do not go to sleep when you're driving with a Hare Krishna. I don't drive. If I did, it would be even worse. Also, in my family, I lost two families. I'm from a big family with 13 children. So two of my family members and their families were killed in car accidents. It's not a joke what Prabhupada's talking about here. Very serious. Prabhupada says, in his automobile, the living entity is full of anxieties and his struggle is not at all auspicious. So the point is, everyone has to struggle in this world. The world's made like that, so there's no escaping having to struggle. But we have to know what we have to struggle for, what was the main focus of our struggle should be. Just like it was Narada Muni in his previous life. He was in the forest meditating very deeply, and the Lord appeared before him. But the Lord only appeared momentarily, and then he told him, you won't see me again in this life, but you'll always be anxious to see me. And he said, and Prabhupada said in the purport that the more anxious you are to see Krishna, all your material anxieties go away. Similarly, if one is struggling in his life to purify himself and advance in spiritual life, he doesn't have to be in so much material anxiety. This is how it works. Apart from human beings, other species like cats and dogs are also struggling very hard day and night for existence. Thus, the struggle for existence continues, and the conditioned soul changes from one position to another. For a while, he is a child, but he has to become a boy. So who remembers what it was like to be a child, having a carefree, innocent childhood full of wonder? Does anybody remember that experience? I remember. How it was nice to be a child, and the world was fantastic. And how nerve-wracking it was to start to realize that actually, this place is scary. I remember the first time I heard of death. I remember the first time I realized people were lying to me. Because I probably mentioned this before, but it was one of my traumatic experiences. Someone was talking about Santa Claus, telling me there was no Santa Claus, and another sibling was saying, shut up. And I'm like, why shut up? And then I got to know that my parents had been lying to me, that there was no such thing as Santa Claus. And I was thinking, why are they lying to me? Why are they telling me these things if it's not true? It was like very disturbing. I didn't care about this fat guy coming down the chimney. I did care that they were lying to me. It was very upsetting. So this is what it means to go from being a child to the next stage, a boy, a girl. From a boy, he has to change into a youth, and from a youth to manhood and old age. Finally, when the body is no longer workable, he has to accept a new body in a different species. Giving up the body is called death, and accepting another body is called birth. I'm sure you've all heard this experience, right? There's some people say life sucks and then you die. Have you heard that? It's a common expression these days. Life sucks, and then you die. So my daughter was telling me that one time. And I said, yeah, and then you take birth again. She goes, thanks, Mom, you made my whole day. Well, of course, if she was a little bit more interested in Krishna consciousness, she'd get encouraged. As close she gets to Krishna, as close as she's gotten to Krishna so far as Mom, can you pray to the blue guy? There's something, you know, if she has some crisis in her life. Can you ask that blue guy to... it's one step in the right direction, right? So we don't want to come back to this world of birth and death. And this was mentioned yesterday by Ekanath Prabhu in this class, which was interesting. When a young person mentions that, I find it means they've gotten something. They've understood that this place is... this world is a place of suffering. And even one of my sisters she's not God conscious, particularly God conscious, but in her own way, she understands this world's a place of misery. She goes, not me. It's done. I'm not coming back. Well, I think she's a little overconfident, but at least she's understood something very important. Prabhupada says, the human form is an opportunity to take shelter of the bona fide spiritual master and through him, the Supreme Lord. Yes, I'd like to mention here. Yes, this is what Prahlad Maharaj was telling his friends. The human body is most rarely achieved. And although temporary like other bodies, it is meaningful because in human life one can perform devotional service. Even a slight amount of sincere devotional service can give one complete perfection. So we should... we're doing it every day. We're surrounded by devotional life, and sometimes we... maybe a lot of the time we take so many things for granted, because that's the nature of the conditioned mind, to become kind of mechanical and numb, especially if you do the same things. So unless one is very intelligent in one's approach to this unlimited opulence that Prabhupada's given us, one might not understand how rare it is. It's extremely rare. That's why it's good to go out and preach. And one can see the contrast. The Krishna Consciousness Movement has been started to give an opportunity to all the members of human society who are misled by foolish leaders. People don't know that loving Krishna, that Vishnu, that serving the Lord is the goal of human life. Prabhupada says, no one can get out of the struggle for existence, which is full of miseries, without accepting a pure devotee of the Lord. The material attempt changes from one position to another, and no one actually gains relief from the struggle for existence. So we know so many people trying to solve the problems of life. Lately I saw a book called Feeding Your Demons, very interesting Buddhist book about... whatever you anartha you have inside of you that's holding you back, you shouldn't fight it, you shouldn't ignore it, you should personify it, ask it what it wants, what it needs, and give it what it needs, and it'll leave you alone. So it's an interesting concept. I like the idea very much, but Prabhupada says without taking shelter of Krishna consciousness, one cannot get any relief. And then Prabhupada, in another place, he was asking his devotees, are you realizing that there is no civilization? Actually, civilization we are introducing. Except Aryan civilization, Vedic civilization, there is no civilization. Animal society. What do you think? Are you convinced about it? And then Acharya Rishi was saying in his Vyasa Puja offering to Srila Prabhupada. Time and time again, you spent numerous hours explaining the sublime philosophy of Krishna consciousness to me. And time again, you turned to me like a mother begging of her naughty child. Are you convinced? Do you now appreciate that this Krishna consciousness is the highest philosophy? In my youth and arrogance, I kept quiet with doubtful eyes. And then in Tehran, in the car, off Daulat, must be a place, you turned to me and boldly stated, I have come here just to save you. I traveled here to give you my mercy. And again I fixed my eyes at your feet, tormented by the agony of disbelief. It's not easy to be convinced, because we've tried to put our faith in so many people and in so many situations and so many solutions, and we've always been disappointed. Even a great devotee, my god sister Gauri, she was in Vrindavan, she was leaving her body. She was in the process of dying. She wrote many beautiful things. And one beautiful thing she wrote, she was suffering like hell, I tell you. She was really suffering with cancer in Vrindavan. Can you imagine? And that was like 25, 30 years ago. And in Vrindavan that time, they didn't have a hospice and they didn't have the conditions. Sometimes they would find her sleeping in her own stool and urine and vomit. because the devotees were busy, they didn't always know what it meant to take care of a person who was dying of cancer. But she got so much realization, and she, because she was so serious, and she wrote this beautiful poem about Krishna and how he had arms like, this is Rasika stuff, you know, arms like serpents. That's how the gopis were describing Krishna. And then she mentioned this one beautiful line that always strikes me. It goes right to the core. That deep within my heart, there still remained one doubt that you really are a person who would come and pull me out. So this is the serious doubt that the conditioned soul has, that this material world really is a place of suffering, and the solution is that the Lord will come and pull us out. So this is something that by taking to the process of devotional service and associating with devotees can gradually, we can have this anartha removed. Especially hearing from Srila Prabhupada chanting the holy name destroys anarthas that we don't even know we have. Prabhupada says, the only resort is the lotus feet of a bona fide spiritual master, and through him, the lotus feet of the Lord. Yes, when I was reading this, I was remembering in the last days of my father was passing away. And at that time, I got to go to Antwerp, and my relationship with my father wasn't that great. I did everything. I did my duties. I asked the devotees to pray for him. I arranged to get some of his dust to go to the Jamuna River. And devotees were so kind, they even let me phone him and we made closure. It was very wonderful. So at that time in Antwerp, Govinda Maharaj, Bibi Govinda Maharaj, was giving a wonderful seminar about the Chaitanya Charitamrita. And it was in the section about devotional service. Lord Chaitanya, I believe, he's instructing Rupa Goswami in devotional service. And these beautiful verses were being quoted. The conditioned souls are wandering throughout the different planets of the universe, entering various species of life. By good fortune, one of these souls may somehow or other be delivered from the ocean of nescience, just as one of many big logs in a flowing river may by chance reach the shore. And then the verse was quoted from the Srimad Bhagavatam. I think it's also, no, this verse was, who was saying this verse? I forget who it was. I can't remember. It's from the Srimad Bhagavatam. Because I am so fallen, I shall never get a chance to see the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This was my false apprehension. Rather, by chance, a person as fallen as I am may get to see the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is how it works. Although one is being carried away by the waves of the river of time, one may eventually reach the shore. By good fortune, one becomes eligible to cross the ocean of nescience, and when one's term of material existence decreases, one may get the opportunity to associate with pure devotees. By such association, one's attraction to Krishna is awakened. And then there's a beautiful glorification. O my Lord, O infallible Supreme Person, when a person wandering throughout the universe becomes eligible for liberation from material existence, he gets an opportunity to associate with devotees. When he associates with devotees, his attraction for you is awakened. You are the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the highest goal of the topmost devotees and the Lord of the universe. So I sent a very abbreviated version of this to my father. I asked my sister, please read this to him, because I know my father was feeling very afraid and very disturbed, and I wanted to somehow to plant a seed of hope in his heart that even though we may have done so many activities that have nothing to do with our relationship with God, if we have a little hope and a little prayer, then we can reach the shore of the ocean of material existence. I didn't, you know, I couched it in very general terms. So even though this Krishna consciousness is so rare, and to be attracted to Krishna, to react even to self-realization, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita that out of many thousands of men, one may endeavor perfection. So this idea that, you know, to endeavoring for spiritual perfection, it's such a rare thing that people want to do this. And of those who have achieved some level of spiritual perfection, hardly one knows Krishna in truth. It's very important to meditate on this. And Prabhupada, he understood. He understood. And he was driven. He was a driven man, they say. He was driven by his desire to give an opportunity to all the members of human society who were led by misled by foolish leaders. And so to this end, Prabhupada performed endless tapasya. Happily he performed it for our sake, for the sake of all souls. So by hearing from him repeatedly, because when we hear from Prabhupada, we hear from the whole parampara, we hear from Krishna himself. So we need to discuss and hear, discuss, and try to understand Prabhupada's teachings and do everything we can to help others to benefit from these teachings. And especially we need to try to set a good example by living our lives intelligently in Krishna consciousness. And that way we can be of service to the mission, to ourselves, to one another, and to the world. So thank you for listening patiently. If anyone has any comments or questions, corrections, yes, Matt. Yes, it's an abbreviated version. It's funny because actually one of my nieces put something online about there's no solution, there's so much suffering, there's no way out, and I put the Sanskrit and the English, because on my Facebook I don't write much, but every now and then I get this opportunity to pop something in. And you know, people—they're always running into this. In my family, especially, and I'm sure other people, they just every now and then. Another niece of mine was writing, you know, how she was woke up one day and she was realizing what a useless struggle it all was, and she was describing her struggle. And then I cut some shastra and put it in there. She never responded, but you know, you just try to take the opportunity. Thank you, Madhu. Prabhu, you wanted to say that? Yeah, there's different ways. Thank you. What's the practical means to avoid falling into that rut of taking the orders for granted, making offenses? One thing is, preaching is very important. If you go out into the world, you have a barometer to compare. Another thing is, we expect sometimes the devotees to be so, why aren't they more transcendental? Or why am I not more transcendental? But it's important to get to know the devotees as persons. They're not just floundering transcendentalists. They're very serious about their spiritual life, but it's, as we see, it's not easy. So once you get to know someone personally, then you don't stand so much in judgment on them. You feel for them because you see, they're just like me. It's struggling just like me, different circumstances, whatever. But so those two things, loving exchanges, revealing the mind and confidence, serving the devotees, and trying to help, going out into the world and doing whatever you can to attract people to spiritual life. Those are, maybe someone else has other ideas, suggestions, what do you do? Would anybody like to mention something that you do to minimize your familiarity with devotees and the tendency to make fetishes, Madhupur? Mm.
Get a little what? Get a little what?
Tense,
yeah. Thank you. Yes, Prabhu. Yes. That's a really nice one. I love that one too. Let me just, I guess if I look for find, I don't have to. Yes. So this is from a purport, Canto 1, Chapter 2, Text 17. This is, I believe it's Shunvatam Swakatara Krishna. That the Lord is reciprocally respondent to his devotees. When he sees that a devotee is completely sincere in getting admittance to the transcendental service of the Lord and has thus become eager to hear about him, the Lord acts from within the devotee in such a way that the devotee may easily go back to him. The Lord is more anxious to take us back into his kingdom than we can desire. I thought, he's big, we're very small. Yes. Looking at for liberation. Oh, you have to leave right now, Prabhu. I'm joking. Yeah. Well, I remember one time I was doing book distribution and I was getting all mental because I knew I wasn't purely motivated. So I told my Sankirtan leader, I said, I'm not purely motivated. He goes, I don't care what your motivation is, just get motivated. So in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna talks about four different people who come to him, right? Talks about people who want wealth. It's not unusual for people to come and pray to the deity, you know, help me become economically. People who are suffering, they want liberation from suffering. People who are just curious what this Hare Krishna people are all about. And people who are looking for knowledge. So if I listen to you, it sounds like you came because you want to become liberated from suffering, right? And you're probably looking for knowledge. So that's normal in the material world. No one loves Krishna from the beginning. And Prabhupada, Krishna says it, it's rare. It's very rare. It's the greatest gift. I was just also hearing from Srila Prabhupada, and he was saying that Krishna gives many things to people that they ask for. But to give service and pure love is very rare. So you're in the right place, and your motivation may not be completely pure. But you can go to so many places to try to get liberation from suffering. There's so many things that you can do. But if you take shelter of Krishna, there's also another verse. How does it go? Moksha kama udaradi tivrena akama sarva kama ba moksha kama udaradi tivrena bhakti yogena yajita purusham puram. That you may have a desire for liberation. You may have material desire, you may have no material desire, but whatever your desire is, you should by all means take shelter of the Lord. So, if you understand, faith means that you believe that by being Krishna conscious, you can achieve complete perfection. So you may not have pure love for Krishna now, and you may not be doing everything out of pure love for Krishna, but that's why it's called sadhana, that's why it's called Vaidhi Bhakti. You're doing it because you understand that the goal will give perfection, will give you liberation, but you'll get much more from that. Anybody else like to say something about that? Rami? We have to what? Yes. Yes. Is that helpful, Gai? Pardon me? You have to speak louder, I'm a little deaf. With the Shikshastikam. Yeah, if you chant the Shikshastikam is a great advertisement for chanting Hare Krishna. It's amazing. So if you chant that daily, you'll be very inspired. Okay? Gaya is very serious about his spiritual life, even if it is for liberation. But Prabhupada said, it's very rare. But the Lord, if he sees any little opening, he's going to come there and try to give you, you know, full opportunity. So I find Gaya's association quite inspiring. Just seeing him around. Very sober, very serious. Yes, Dharanipu? Yes. Maybe. Yeah. Yeah. Nectar of devotion. Well, also nectar of instruction says you should be very confident. You have to, yeah. Well, you can see this is the mercy of a pure devotee that we can even get the seed of that. I mean, we have some confidence. We have, it's bhakti, it's mercy. Oh, the doubt. Well, from what I understand is that once we left the shelter of Krishna, then we try to take shelter in the material energy. And no matter what exalted enjoyment or position we found ourselves in, we had to always be disappointed. So we've lost faith in the sense of ultimate shelter. We've lost faith in that. It's very deep-rooted doubt that we have. And then, by the mercy of God, you meet a pure devotee, and you meet someone who has taken complete shelter of Krishna, who is completely in shelter, and you see something that you want. The only way that bhakti can begin to develop, bhakti produces bhakti. That was Prabhupada's incredible potency, that he, by his presence, he could cut through all of that. Who knows how many lifetimes of illusion, and inspire us. It's incredible. So now our goal is to, and our duty and our responsibility and our only hope is to hold on to that for dear life and do whatever we can to move forward and purify this tendency to doubt that Krishna will, that Krishna is our shelter. That's one of the six symptoms of pure devotional service, right? That one has complete faith that Krishna is my maintainer and my protector. So it comes from the influence of the material energy, and it's removed by the mercy of the pure devotee. And it's removed by, like Prabhupada says, the last thing he says in the purport, he says, yeah. Well, this is earlier on, but he repeated it at the end. If he is at all eager to be relieved of the struggle for existence, he must find a bona fide guru and take instructions at his lotus feet. In this way, he can get out of the struggle. And Prabhupada says, if he takes shelter of the lotus feet of a pure devotee, you get the shelter of the lotus feet of Krishna. Because the reason why we're not completely surrendering, right, is because we still have these doubts. These are in our heart. There's this idea that I can get enjoyment here or shelter there or security there. It's subtle. And the more we advance in Krishna consciousness, the more these are revealed and dissolved. It's false humility to say that I'm not a devotee. Right. That's another trick of Maya. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, is it your judgment that you find that I'm defective and so you reject me? But that's, this is what you say to someone that you completely... Just imagine in this world, sometimes people who love other people fall at their feet and say these things. This is the madness of pure love for Krishna. He is, and to even feel that, you're already there, you know. I mean, the gopis were talking like that to Krishna. The gopis were talking to Krishna like this, in this mood. Of course, it's a different flavor in that he's speaking like a conditioned soul, but that intensity, like that, how can you reject me? And Narottam says, please don't kick me away from your reddish lotus feet. Now, from a material viewpoint, that's called groveling. You know this word grovel? You know what it means? It means you're praying for your life. If someone's going to kill you, and you're begging them, please don't kill me. So for a pure devotee, to be rejected from Krishna is like death, and he's begging for his life. But it's another dimension that no one in the material mindset can understand. Just like when Krishna had to leave Vrindavan, the gopis came out of their houses like someone who had been told they are going to die. Because that's what it meant for them. They had to be separated. So this is, I'm very much attracted to the intensity of it and the purity of it. But it's not something that can be understood from a material viewpoint. It's exalted devotion. It's very attractive. And that's why these bhajans, we're very much encouraged to sing these bhajans, because if we sing these bhajans in good association, they awaken some old feeling that's been sleeping for a long time. So, yeah, but we can't imitate that. We can't. Even? Especially if you think that way. I don't know how many of you have had your moments when you think, I don't deserve it. There's no way I deserve it. But I want it. And this, it consumes you. The feeling, I wish it would consume me. If it could consume us 24/7, we'd be in a very good place. Even Prabhupada was talking about his little teeny service that he was doing for Krishna. Prabhupada talked about his little teeny service. Very exalted. These are nice meditations to contemplate, too. Shall we end here? I have a feeling people are probably thinking it's time for prasadam and it's getting a little late, but thank you, Jadavani, for bringing that up. Hare Krishna.